You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, I hope to cover in the next hour about probably two stories. I'll see how long the first one goes, and if I have time, I'll definitely get into the second story. And this is really a follow-up. Really, both of these are follow-ups to stories I've been covering in the past. One concerns Google Glass. And if you're not familiar with Google Glass, it's a little lens that you can wear if you're wearing glasses right now. And I have pictures of this on my companion blog, and that's probably a better way to just for those that are unfamiliar with, to go to PronkPops, that's PronkPops .wordpress.com. And what I do is have, for first-time listeners, that's where you go to actually listen to the program. While I'm streaming the program right now, I'm also recording it, so you can listen to it as a podcast at your convenience. And the way you get to that is to click on the links at the top of the page. And I have usually about the first 60 shows in the past. And underneath that, I have a complete archive. And by clicking on it, you'll get information. Now, most people that listen to these shows, what they do is they go through a search engine, and they'll be looking for certain stories. And that's really how I get most of my listeners. They're looking for additional information on a specific issue. And this is a talk show that's geared to what the breaking news is. And we've had, for example, for the last week or two, I've been covering, for example, the National Security Agency, Obamacare, as well as illegal immigration, because those are stories in the news. Well, today, one of the stories that's been highlighted is Google Glass and its new app. And it's not an app that's available yet. It's still being tested, but it's definitely going to be coming down the pike, and I'll get into why I think it'll be a very popular application. And you'll be surprised who will really like this information. Not surprised, but it has an obvious... I went through some demos of this, and it seems to me that it will take off. Because what it enables you to do, if you have a pair of these Google Glasses, and there's a little... And you look at the picture, for all my shows, I give you additional information. For this one, I have a number of YouTube videos for those that really have never seen Google Glass or know nothing about it or very little about it. And at the very top, I have a picture of a lady looking, wearing a pair of glasses, but on the right-hand side, you'll see it looks like a little camera. And attached to the camera is glass. It's a lens. And you can be looking through your glasses, but in the right corner of your eye, it'll be giving you information. It's a computer screen, and you can, for example, tap the right side of it and say, "Take a picture," and it will. Glass, take a picture, and it will take a picture. Well, the next obvious thing, if it's a complete stranger, you'd like to know their name and some information. So there's going to be an application that's being developed right now by software developers that will enable you to say what name it is. Key thing is, this will have to search a database of photographs and, using facial recognition software, try to get a match. And this software is pretty reliable. You're still going to get about anywhere from 97 to 98, 99% correct, but you're still going to get some false identifications. And typically it's between 0 and 3%. And it depends how good the photograph is, obviously the lighting, and whether or not there's a photograph in a database. Now, when I saw the demo, it took anywhere from 4 to 5 seconds to as long as over 10 seconds to make the identification. And these were people that are obviously in their database. So there's a search time involved. It's a database query. That's what they're doing. They're trying to match images. So what the app will do is take a picture and then have software will analyze that picture, looks for points on your face to match. And I'm not going to get technical on this, but the technology has really come a long way. I used to sell, for example, surveillance cameras. And at the time, some of my prospective customers were, for example, anyone that had a lot of vehicles coming and going. They would like to be able to capture on the video which truck it is, and to do that, you needed a special camera that that could identify license, could read license plates numbers. Those cameras, and this is many years ago, were expensive. They've certainly come down in price, but they're because you want to be able to read clearly what that license plate is. Well, it's even more important with facial recognition. It's relatively simple with a license plate, as long as you have a very high resolution camera and it can capture that image, then you can, there's software that'll that, for example, could say, okay, at a certain time and date, such and such a truck entered with this license, and match it against your own. It's part of our fleet, and at that time, a certain driver should be driving. So companies could track both people coming into their facility as well as going out. However, those cameras are expensive, and really only large corporations wanted them and could afford them. Now the price has really come down. Now they've taken, and that's just a similar technology. What they're doing here, technology is always advancing. There's been a lot of innovation. So what you can do now is take a picture from that using Google Glass. It's like a computer, just like your cell phone camera can take a picture. Well, you're wearing a computer, and it's obviously through wireless is connecting to databases, and it's going to take some processing time, but it can search the database. It's looking for, it's looking at pictures that you've stored of individuals, and can then flash back. We have an identification. It's whatever your name is, and then if they have more information, they'll give it to you. Now, who would be interested in this? My first reaction was, well, they're going to have to speed it up because people are impatient. People will wait a couple of seconds, even in a minute, to get the information if it's important to them. But most people want it as fast as possible. So I said, well, you couldn't do this for the world's population because you're looking at 7 billion people, and you don't have the pictures or the information on 7 billion people. But here's the thing. Just think of in the state of Texas. There are millions of people who obviously has pictures. If you're driving in Texas, the Texas Motor Vehicle Department has your picture. It's on your driver's license. And that's just one database. There are others, but that's an important one. And even if you don't drive, many people get, at least in Texas, get identification cards for whatever, you know, for cashing a check. They don't drive, but they have a Texas Department of Motor Vehicles ID. So that's just and every state has this. To my knowledge, every state has it. So that's an obvious database that you would like to link in. Now, it's not going to tell you much information. It's a public, it's the state of Texas database. It's why police officers can get information on that. I'm not sure the general public could. As a matter of fact, I doubt it. However, that's an obvious one. Now, what was immediately coming to mind, I'm sitting on the Richland College campus. And we have, on any given semester, about 20,000 students, plus or minus. And we have several hundred, and there are a few teachers and staff, and some are former, some are currently working. So you could have literally several thousand either currently employed staff or teachers, or past, you know, people that are retired or worked to you in the past. And you have, so you're looking at probably, I'm just putting a ballpark, 25,000 minimum, and you have pictures of them because students must get a student ID card that has their pictures, and they get their pictures taken. Well, where am I going with this? We have on-campus Richland College police, and they're big into technology, and several years ago they got these scooters, and they've been sort of absent recently because they've had some mechanical problems and they're getting retrofitted and repaired, but they'll be back. I've been told, yes, we are going to bring these scooters back. And the only problem I was seeing with it, and I witnessed this many times, and I'm not the only person, these scooters can pick up speed, and I've seen officers going fairly rapid. I'm talking 25 miles an hour or more. You can really go, and that's why they're using them. It's a quick way to get around campus. It's not a wheelchair. You got to stand up. You have a bar, you know, and you can steer it. But that's one of the problems with it, that you got to really make sure that the officers understand there's a speed limit involved. Yes, it's important to get from point A to point B, but you don't want to run over and crash into people that are, whether it's a student or a staff, doing it. And usually they understand that. Usually when they're rapidly going from point A to B, there's not a crowd around. But here's the big but. When, especially during the day and early evening, the campus tends to be crowded. So you obviously can't use that. It's not very effective in crowded spaces. It is effective where you have to go through transit from point A to point B and you have a clear path. But one of the things is people can, for example, just open a door and you're going down a hall. Someone opens the door, bang, you hit it, and the officer is flat on as you know what and can be injured. And that's one of the problems. Officers have been injured when they use the scooters. Well, the scooters are going to come back. And this is not uncommon to other college campuses. Now, they obviously use patrol cars, they have SUVs that go around campus, and they also have on-foot patrols. Well, I think you can make the obvious connection. Once this technology is perfected, and Google Glass is in what I would call the beta stage, they're having customer early adapters are buying it and using it. It's not widespread. This is not a widespread release. So the glass is available. This application is not, although there are, my understanding, they do have some users using it now. But what could they do? On a college campus, you could equip the police, for example, to wear these glasses. And you don't need it. You can get, and people have bought prescription lenses and fitted it into the Google Glass frames with the eyepiece and lens that acts as a... I was in the Air Force. These are what are called... I think of them as heads-up displays. If you've ever been in a fighter aircraft or familiar with fighter aircraft, they have what's called a heads-up display that provides targeting information that they can look through the canopy, and between them and the canopy is information on targets they're tracking, and to get a lock and to fire a missile on. Well, this is similar to that in that you still look for your glasses, but in the right upper right-hand corner, you have a computer screen that's providing you information, and you can take actually pictures and you can take videos, as well as get, for example, let's say you're visiting a city and you need a map, and you could ask it questions like, where's the nearest restaurant, where's the bus stop, where's the nearest police station, fire department. Those are just some of the applications, obvious applications that you can use, and the mapping is very, very important. For example, you could be driving your car wearing prescription glasses, and you could say, give me directions to the nearest grocery store. And it will tell you, go to the next stop sign, turn right, and give you instructions. It can give it both audibly, or it can also show you on a map or visually. So it does have some very useful benefits. You can also receive phone calls. You can ask for information. It'll display it for you. You could do searches on it. That's why Google's, and one of the reasons Google's involved, because they're obviously big in search as well as mapping. But the advance here, you're wearing the technology on your head, and it's going to be miniaturized. I'm sure they're going to make the lens. My problem with the technology so far, it's noticeable you're wearing this. What is going to happen, I anticipate, that they're going to miniaturize this so it's less obvious you're wearing it. If you're wearing Google Glass and you're familiar with what Google Glass is, you know someone is wearing a Google Glass. What you don't know, and here's the problem, whether or not they're actually using it in terms of taking a picture of you, taking a video of you, or getting information off a computer. This new app will enable a person to identify who they're, for example, talking. I have problems with names. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that have problems with names, even people they know all the time. So what you would like to be able to do without really letting the other person know is take a picture of them, and maybe probably through tapping, although you can do it verbally, do an identification. For example, you could do one tap for just take a picture, two taps, ID. And what it would do, it would search a database to come up with an app. Well, let's say you equip police officers at Richland College with a pair of these Google glasses. What could they do? They, when they're talking to a student, let's say they're not sure a person is a student, or they suspect the person is a student, but he's engaged in some activity that or behavior that he shouldn't be. What they can quickly do is identify the name of the student. They can get a match. Why? Because we would have a database with a picture of the student. So, for example, the officer could tap on his lens once to take a picture or twice to get a picture and an ID, and in within seconds get a match. This picture is John Doe. His student ID is whatever it is, whatever the number is. He's currently enrolled or was enrolled at Richland College. We have an open campus, so you don't have to be enrolled to be on Richland College campuses. We have people visiting the campus every day. But what this does is enable the police officer to identify that person. Now, what they also could do is once they identify them, they could also tap into other databases. For example, does this person have a criminal record? So it can go beyond just the facial recognitions, but the first time is just to get the name. So if you have problems remembering names, this is a godsend. Because I've had it happen to me. I know this person. Usually when it happens, I haven't seen him for a period of time. And I know him, and I just, their name is on the tip of my tongue. I don't think I'm unique about that. I think most people have this problem to a varying degree. Some people go out of their ways to make sure they know the names. They're very good at that. They can probably do hundreds. Most people can't. You're going to know the people you interact every day, but there are going to be some people that you might be in a class with and then not see again, or you do see them again, but it might be a couple of semesters later, a couple of years later. And you vaguely recall the face. So what you could do, again, here's the key. You need a database that has the pictures. Now, who are collecting the pictures? Obviously, Google's collecting the pictures. And there are other databases in the country that have pictures, such as your driver's license. Your schools have it. If employers have it, because most companies, not all, but most companies today have an ID. You usually have to wear a badge. So if you're an employee of a company, they have your picture. So there are a lot of databases throughout the country that have your picture. Facebook is accumulating pictures when you submit photos online. You may not be aware of that, and you can opt out of that technology. And there's obviously some privacy issues involved, but let me make very, very clear, today in the United States, if you're in a public area, you really don't have any right to privacy. You can photograph. And that's very important to understand. And I'm sort of the other end of it. You're perfectly legal to do video or photograph. You don't have to ask their permission. You're in a public space, and that can cause problems. And it's going to vary from country to country. But once you match this Google Glass with an app such as NameTag, and I don't know if Google is going to, I assume that this would be an app that they really would want. Now, I'm sure there are other companies developing it. I think you're going to have it on Google Glass, whether that Google wants it or not. It's an obvious application. And for an individual, I could see individuals wanting it to store information, but you got to be connected with one or more databases. And what I initially see, it's more local. For example, I'm in Dallas, Texas. Now, if I'm on the Richland College campus and I could connect to the Richland College database, I can't right now. We don't have this capability right now. But I could, in some future day, get a match. Oh, that's Jane Doe, and she is a student, so at least it jogs my memory. That's sort of the obvious uses. But I'm not always on the Dallas campus. I meet people outside of the Dallas campus. Some of them I know, many of them I don't. To take it a step further, then, you're going to have companies that are going to build databases of images so you can get additional information as to who you're talking to. And one example, I was listening. I actually deleted this video because the guy was obnoxious. But he was bringing up a point. Let's say you're in a store, and for whatever reason, the person you're interacting with is an employee of the store, but he's being rude, obnoxious, not being very helpful, just a pain in you know what. What you could do is take a picture and ask again, tap once for a picture, twice for ID, get a name, and then go to the manager either then or another point and say, listen, I was being served by so-and-so, and complain about his behavior. That's just one. Or get additional information on the person. You see, you're quickly going or can go into an invasion of privacy situation. If you're in the public area, I'm sorry, folks, people have your pictures. Get over it is the only thing I can say. For example, at the very top of my blog for this story, I have my picture. Now, I'm promoting this show by having a picture of what the Prunk Pop show is about and where you can listen to the show, and that's at www.prunkpops.wordpress.com. And you'll get information, including photographs, graphs, videos, articles, about whatever the story I'm covering. So Google Glass, when it comes out, and I think it'll probably a year away, I don't know what Google's plans are. They're very pricey right now. These, I think they're in edition 2 or version 2, and this has not been mass distributed. It's really a limited rollout, if you will, to get consumer feedback. And I'm sure there's going to be feedback. I haven't worn this. I'd be interested in it, but I don't like, because I wear glasses. But I find the lens to be too big that is in the right-hand eye. It's a used camera. I think they really, over a period of time, and it might take 5 to 10 years, they need to get this smaller and smaller, which means transfer the part that could really hold and does hold some of this technology is the frame. But between the lens and this device that I'm sure is holding one or more computer chips as well as a camera, that is just simply too big. It's too obvious. So I think what's going to happen over time, you'll integrate the lens into your eyeglasses where you won't really know that someone, unless you really look closely at the lens, has Google Glass. And at some point in time, even the camera will be made much smaller. Right now, it's obvious there's a camera, just like if you have a cell phone. You know, if you pull out your cell phone, I'm going to pull it out. I have a camera, a really good Samsung. This cost me with tax less than $100. And it's one of those where it's a slider, and it has, I don't use text messaging at all, but I could. I have a keyboard that I can slide out. But I also can take fairly good pictures and videos. And what might surprise you, it did me, and now I'm not at all. What many students do, for example, let's say a professor writes some information on the board, what they'll use during the break or when they leave, they will use their cell phone camera to take a picture of the blackboard or the whiteboard. Or if there's a picture posted, they'll take a picture. Now, they're obviously going to take pictures of their friends. They're obviously going to take pictures of themselves or videos. But you need a lens. And that's what I'm talking about, this eyeglass. It's very, very, very obvious. So these are the early versions. I'm willing to bet that when they, and they cost around $1,500 today. I don't know what the price point is going to, and that's without the prescription lenses. But what you get is a frame, the Google Glass, which has this lens and the technology, as well as some snap-in, either clear lenses or sunglasses. What I see happening is people that wear glasses will get prescription lens for the Google Glass. And I'm sure Google is going to team up with, for example, there are people that specialize in frames. So they'll partner with one or more manufacturers of frames, as well as people that specialize in the actual lenses. So I see a lot of partnering going on, both in terms of the people, because most people, not all, but most people today wear glasses. So the obvious thing is you want to give a person more and more choice. If you want to sell your product, give the person choices. Initially, you really have to go out and get a special lens made to fit in this frame. Where I see the technology going, you could go to any, you get a prescription, you go to a glasses store, or you get the prescription filled, you go to local Walmart, you choose your frames, you choose the style lenses you want, and then if you're interested in Google Glass, you'll add that to it. It'll be an option. So you won't be confined or limited to just the frames that Google has, and that's the way I see this developing. And it's definitely going to be developing over the next 5 to 10 years. We haven't had the mass rollout, but we will. And there are going to be issues. When I initially covered this story, a gentleman and his wife went to a local mall, one of these multi-theater operations. I think it was AMC. And he watched about the first 30 minutes of the movie, and someone tapped him on the shoulder, showed him a badge, please step out, which is embarrassing in of itself. And they were accusing the gentleman of piracy or filming, using his Google Glass to film the movie. Now, what he told the officers real clearly, listen, these are prescription lenses. I was not recording. And see, that's one of the issues. You do not know when a person is using it. There's not a blinking light. There is some sound. And if you know how these operate, that by touching it, as well as speaking certain key phrases or key words, then you might know they're doing it. But that'll evolve, too, as the technology evolves. But the gentleman had not been recording the movie. He was detained for over 3 hours. I really think the police, or in this case, the Department of Homeland Security, did not handle this well on many levels, and neither did AMC. Now, what I can see happening, especially once you have a mass rollout of this, that some places, such as movie theaters, might specifically say, we ban Google Glasses. Well, there's a problem with that, because once this becomes a mass consumer product, and that's what Google is aiming at, the name of the game in any business is have as many users or customers as you can. That's what they're aiming for. And it's smart. It's smart to be in this business space. So initially, while you might be able to ban them, you'd be crazy to do it if you're a business like AMC, for the simple reason, what's going to happen? Now, I probably would not buy this until the price is dirt cheap. So I probably won't be buying this anytime soon, if at all. But if I do buy it, let's say it's under $100, and I, for example, might be needing to change my prescription. So at that point in time, I have my eyes examined. The doctor says, yes, you either need a stronger, vision is poor or better, or whatever. You need a new prescription. You need a new pair of glasses. Fine. I go to the store. I think last time I handed it through Walmart, I was visiting. I normally handle it through another, I was using Sam's. But I would go with a prescription, pick out lenses. Now, what I do is I have two excellent fine frames that I've been using for literally years. They're just well made. I spent a little bit more money, and they've really held up. What I normally do is just get the lenses replaced. Now, let's say this technology really develops, and it's miniaturized. It's really like a snap-on. And that's sort of what I think it will be. It'll be a sleeve, if you will, that you can snap on to the frame on one side of your one side, or maybe both sides. That's something to think about. And make it as, so it's not, right now, it's obviously that you're wearing this. You can't, you know, if someone's wearing Google Glasses, if you're familiar with what it is. I can see a time in a not-too-distant future that I won't say it's impossible, but it would be difficult to know. And I'm sure there'll be some technology that will let you know if someone is looking at you with Google Glasses. I can see that happening. But what I'm leading up to, let's say this technology really drops down, and it's probably 5 to 10 years away, but where this is an option, and I'm just using a price point of $100, which I think probably is not a bad price point. They really got it to 50. I think they're doing gangbusters. So anyone can come with any frame, and as an option, I want Google Glass. Fine, we sell these snap-on sleeves to the frame. I'm talking the frame that goes around your ear. Now, why would you need it? Because part of the advantage of having Google Glass, you can hear telephone you can, just like you use your cell phone, you won't need your cell phone. That gets a little interesting because you'll be engaged in conversations. And what annoys me to no end, I'm not a big fan of people in public places, not on so much on the street, but in a classroom or in a store, talking on the phone. I think it's just the height of rudeness, but that's me. It's annoying. And I think some of these people, they need to be taught manners and courtesy, because that's what it is. They're carrying on conversations, and they are oblivious to the fact that there are people around them that are trying to do whatever they're trying to do. In most cases, you know, I might be in a bookstore looking for a book or whatever. I'd be shopping. I really don't want to hear your conversation with whoever. But people, you know, I don't make a point of this, but, and some people are out and out obnoxious about it. But I don't know how you stop it, because most businesses don't want to, how should I say this, offend or restrict their customers. So people are going to use their cell phones in businesses. I think, unfortunately, that's the way it is. But at one time, people used to smoke all over the place. Now, I don't smoke, and I found it foul when people do it. But I can remember working and in the public, people smoked all the time. Now it's less and less and less. Cultures do change. What is acceptable today will not be acceptable in the future, and vice versa. So I could see at some point, maybe it will be and this really requires people because imagine this, that this really catches on, and I think it will catch on. It may not be Google that really perfects this, though, because you got a number of technologies. You obviously have the opticals, the lenses, and how you integrate that. See, right now it's a separate lens, and I can understand why, but what you really would like is the lens, this computer lens, to actually be integrated with the eyeglasses. Still be in the corner, but you won't know it. You'll know it if you're wearing it, but as far as other people, no. You know, for example, and it took me a while to get used to them, and I really don't use it when I'm reading. I have my glasses off, but I do have bifocals. And initially, I hated them. It was driving me nuts. I've accepted them. But if I actually take my glasses off and you look closely, you can see I have bifocal. And most people, even if they have they had 20/20 eyesight, when they get a certain age, usually past 40, they're going to need reading glasses. So if you're wearing, I'm nearsighted, so that's the primary reason I have the glasses. It really is the primary reason. But I do have bifocals, so I can read with the glasses on. Usually, though, if I'm going to read for many minutes, I will take my glasses off. I don't wear my glasses when I'm reading because I perfectly can read, no problems. But I do spend a lot of time on a computer, and that's where it gets a little iffy. It depends how far the screen is away. Usually, if it's fairly far away, I need my glasses. I try to do what I do when I'm reading, not use my glasses when I'm reading what's on the computer screen, but that requires the computer screen to be much closer. Now, why am I getting into this? Where I see this going, this technology going, is that the Google Glass now, that is obviously you're wearing it, it's thick, will at some point, and hopefully in the not distant future, be part of the actual eyeglass that you would use with your glasses. And it probably will be an option. And it's not going to be cheap. It'll probably, initially, my guess will run about $1,000 or under. The $1,500 price point, if you're an early adopter, that's high. Most people are not going to get this. The only people that are going to get this have well-paying jobs. And I like to say they have too much money and too much time. Nice situation to be in. So there are people that are into gadgets, and they want to be the first one on their block to have it. They want to think they're cool doing it. So they're going to be the ones that have it. For example, I used to be a regular viewer of Channel 9. Now, not the television station. Channel 9 is a Microsoft, part of Microsoft. And what they used to do, and I think they still do it, is they have people going around to various parts of Microsoft and interviewing people that, and this was primarily for software developers, programmers, and tell their customers what they're working on. And one gentleman was Robert Scoble. He's no longer there. But by accident, I ran into a video. They were discussing privacy. He was being interviewed. And I guess he's working for, he's bounced around, and I've sort of lost track of him. But he used to be very popular when he was the gentleman going around doing the videos at Microsoft. And I think that sort of lost something when he left. He left, had some, I don't think where he went actually worked out. I don't know. I've lost track of him. But he was very good. He's very personable, very, I would say, upbeat. And he wasn't a programmer, but he was into technology, into gadgets, and he's into Google Glass. And he was saying he's been wearing them so long, it becomes second nature. He doesn't think he's wearing them. It's like my eyeglasses. I don't think I'm wearing them. Occasionally, I'll walk out the door and not have my glasses on. And about the time I reach my car, I have to go back and get my glasses. And the reason why, I used to, for many, many, many years, use contact lenses. So they were a pain to get in the morning, but once I had them, and I use hard lenses. Most people don't use hard lenses. I have a brother that uses soft. But I got used to the hard lenses and preferred them and could wear them, and you have to build up. See, the problem is once you go back to glasses, it's going to take you several days, some people several weeks, to build up. You got to get used to them, and that just takes time. And today, most of them prescribe soft. I like the hard, quite frankly. And at some future date, I might go back to it, but I have not decided because my eyesight is somewhat changing. I sort of lost my train of thought. But my point is, I was listening to a video on the privacy impacts of Google Glass, and the point Scoble or Robert was making is you get used to wearing them, and they're not always on. You can't really tell whether it's like whether you whether your computer's on, because that's what this is. It's a computer screen in the right-hand corner of your eye, and it's a wearable computer screen that enables you to get information, for example, off the web. What would be attractive for me, I'm in talk radio, and I really don't watch television at home. I don't have internet access at home. When I'm home, I do three things. I sleep, I eat, obviously go to the bathroom, take a shower, and do what you would do in your home. But the big thing I do is read. And I deliberately have made that choice that at home I'm going to be reading usually books or articles, but primarily books. I enjoy reading, and I'm off the computer. Now, I've been debating whether or not I should get a computer at home as well as TV access, because I need to be up on breaking stories. And I'm not going to have time to cover my second story, but I'll introduce it and tease you on it. Last night and this morning, one of the breaking stories was that the Congressional Budget Office had released a report about the cost as well as the employment impacts of Obamacare. And one thing that I could see very useful, let's say I was wearing Google Glass and the technology is much further along than it is today, I could say search Congressional Budget Office report on Obamacare breaking news. Those would be sort of the key words. Just like if I was going to go to Google to look up information as well as videos. And I might even specify YouTube videos on subject, articles on subject. Well, what you'll be able to do is use your eyeglasses as a computer screen, just like fighter pilots they still do, and they've been using this for 30 years. This is not new technology. Have heads-up displays that track when they're going after, let's say, an enemy fighter and are trying to kill them, blow them out of the sky. They have a heads-up display that will display various targeting information. And I'm not going to get in a head-up display. Other than that, that is what Google Glass is. It's a display on your glasses of information just like on a computer screen. And it would be real nice. I could have, at home, if I were wearing the glasses, assume for a moment I don't have other computers, I could have gotten some basic information. I knew I was going to do a story about this, and I'm going to hold it off for the next show for several reasons. But I could get the essential information, and they were discussing it, and I could pull up articles about it. And this is a big story that will get more attention, because the estimate is over the next 10 years, you'll have the equivalent loss of over 2.5 million full-time jobs. That's significant. And also, it's going to cost $1.2 trillion. This is a higher estimate. This is the third revision upwards. I knew that's going to happen. And remember, the Congressional Budget Office supposedly is nonpartisan, but they can only score. And what they mean by score is what are the impacts of a proposed bill? What is the impact of Obamacare into terms of the cost to the American economy? And they're doing estimates, and today, yesterday, they revised it upwards to $1.2 trillion, over 10 years. Well, I could have gotten the details. That's what would be, for me, assuming it was at the right price point, and for me, that would be under $100. I'm not going to spend a lot of money for this. And I probably would have to wait at least 5 to 10 years before it will be there. It'll be there. I was not an early adapter of cell phones. I resisted it. I still don't particularly like them because they're tracking you. I'm not paranoid. I'm just knowing they know where you're at. In your car, they're tracking you. The National Security Agency, if they want to find you, those are the two easiest ways for them to find, where is he right now? Or where is my car and where is my cell phone? Now, why would they want that information? Let's say for whatever reason I become a target, and I'm not going to do an NSA story, but I want you to relate to this. The NSA, as for whatever, I've gotten on a watch list. I'm a target. I'm innocent, but I'm now a target. Where is he located? Well, if you ask any private investigator, they will tell you what they really want. One of the key bits of information that they really want, if they're going to be investigating a person, is a recent photograph of that person. That's critical. And sometimes they can get a lot of information but no photograph, because there's some people that don't want to be recognized. And it's usually the bad guys. It's usually the criminals, the terrorists that want to do you harm or somebody harm. They don't want to have their photographs taken. Now, if they go to prison or they're part of the military, guess what? Their photographs on record. Most people's photographs are in some databases, and the National Security Agency can get at virtually all of them. So with this technology developing, I can see where I would like it, because I could easily, without stopping what I'm doing, let's say I'm reading a book, and usually I am at home, and I might have the radio tuned to one of the talk shows that I will monitor, in the sense I'm curious, you know, what is the break? What are they talking about? And I like to get information, because as you can see, I talk for a complete hour. We don't have call-ins because we're not equipped for call-ins. We don't have a large enough audience for call-ins. Even people in commercial radio locally, that can be a problem until you develop a very large audience, because only 1 or 2% of your audience will call, and it's not really representative of your whole audience. So what needs to happen? They need to screen the calls, because you're going to get some calls that quite frankly are boring or off the wall, or people that are on drugs or alcohol or incoherent, can't make a point or want to tell you their life history. It's boring. And I'm not insulting those people, but they don't seem to understand that the talk show host needs to keep it interesting, needs to keep the show moving, and needs to be on target. And what I mean by that is, what story is he covering? So today, let's say I was equipped with I have a huge audience and people are calling in. I would take calls on Google Glass, and specifically this new application, NameTag, that has the capability, or hopefully will have the capability, to be incorporated into Google, where a person that is wearing a Google Glass, once this application is part of this technology, can get the names of the person. He can put a name with a photograph and further can get additional information. Well, if someone's calling in on that, I'd like to hear their comments. I'd like to hear their views. However, if someone's calling on, let's say, what I was talking about yesterday, illegal immigration, I'm sorry, I'm not doing that today. That's not, I do breaking news or news stories that are in the news. Many news stories have legs. It's not just the 24-hour so-called news cycle. I will look at a much broader range of subjects. But I still want, I call it, I need a news hook. What is in the news today? What are people talking about? What will your news maybe talk about? And that's why I'm talking about Google Glass. Tomorrow I won't be talking about it. So you need a large audience. You're going to have people calling in, and you want them to be interesting. As Rush Limbaugh says, you want the caller to make you look good. That doesn't mean they're apple polishing, but you want someone that's articulate, can express themselves in clear, precise sentences, and is talking about whatever you're talking about. And he either can ask you questions or provide great comments. The problem is it's like playing music. I've never been a disc jockey, never have no desire to be one, never have. But you can be playing great music that you like, and imagine you had a call-in and then you play their music. Well, guess what? Most of it is going to be terrible. And see, that's why most of these good, top-rated talk shows are tightly screened. And you might want to talk about, for example, Google Glass in this app, but you can't express yourself, or you're saying, well, that doesn't work. Even some of the best talk show hosts do it. I do it occasionally. I edit out most of that. I don't do it that often, but that can be a problem. And I've listened very closely to some talk show hosts, some very highly rated, and you'll be surprised. So you need someone that's really articulate to call in. So I wish Google wants to set me up with Google Glass. I'll be happy to wear it. But I'm going to have to wear it with my prescription lenses. But I'm sorry, I can't pay a dime for it. Wouldn't pay a dime for it. And I really need the technology when it rolls out. And I think it's just like your first iPhone or first iPad. Who runs out to get it? People with money that want to be the new adapters. Usually it takes several years to really strongly penetrate the market, but that's what businesses want to do. The way you make a fortune is not catering. Well, you can make money catering to the very, very rich, but the name of the game to really make a big fortune is you want to sell a product that everyone needs and wants. They want it. They gotta have it. And usually it takes time to do that, because you need to perfect it and there'll be issues with it. Right now, I know they're trying to make it as attractive as possible to wear, but I just find it very annoying seeing these people with this rather what I think is a thick lens, and this camera, it's just too big. Will that change? You better believe it will change. Google has the money and the motivation to make this happen, because it plays with a number of their technologies. Just think about it for a minute. If I had these glasses, I don't have to stop what I'm doing, reading and listening to the radio show. I can either I will say, search keywords. Won't need the word keywords, but I'll do search, and I'll give a list of names. Google Glass, applications, name tag, invasion of privacy, latest development, breaking news, search. And what will happen? Within seconds, on my eyeglasses, a couple of things. I'll have a list of articles just on like a Google search. I can ask videos, add videos to search, and it can give me the YouTube videos. And I can say play video and give the name. You see how this technology could really take off? It does a number of things. It makes computers wearable. That's the best way to maybe describe it. And what I mean by wearable, it's in your ear in the sense of for your cell phones and getting the audio track, but it's also giving you the visual information through your eyeglasses. It's revolutionary. It's been thought about for many, many years, but we're finally getting to where the technology is developing and developing and developing. I was talking about this in the newsroom. They're trying to get the paper out today and tomorrow because the campus, there's no classes on the campus Thursday and Friday. They have this annual district event, and I need to say this, I'm providing information primarily to college students. There are no classes Thursday and Friday. The campus will reopen Saturday and Sunday if you need to go to the computer labs in either Del Rio, and on Saturday the multimedia lab will be open. But both of those computer labs will be shut down Thursday and Friday. Now, I need to say this, and this is my sort of the gripe portion of the program. I usually don't do this, but it really is annoying. I understand that the district has this event every year. And for 2 days, the staff, it's sort of combination community service. Some training is involved. They have to go to a meeting. Fine. If that's what you want to do, fine. Do it. Not all the faculty are happy about it, but fine. Do it. Here's the problem. It interferes with the students' learning of these courses. You have this is the third week of instruction. Suddenly, it's 2 days off. Well, some students, it's 2 days off. Fine, I'll accept the 2 days off and do whatever I'm doing, but I would like access to the Richland College campus. Now, the buildings are going to be open. The problem is both the multimedia lab and computer lab will be closed. I believe the library, as a matter of fact, 99% sure, the library will be closed. And they're really not encouraging students to come to campus. I have news for them. Students will come to campus for the simple reason they can get access to the web. Now that I've said it, they'll probably shut it down. The point I'm trying to make, they could have scheduled these 2 days prior to the start of the semester. That's when they should schedule it. Or if they're still going to insist on having this district-wide meeting during the semester, fine, then keep the services that students need, namely the computer labs and the libraries, open. And they should do it. But they think they come first, so this is a real special 2 days. They seem to forget that their purpose here is to educate students, and there are people that take it seriously and would like to use both the library and the computer facilities to continue studying and learning whatever they're doing. It's very, very annoying, but I will do what most students do, and I'm only taking a course, really, to get access to the computers and this studio. I mean, I already have my degrees. I'm doing this really this is practice for me. I joke, this is like band practice, and that's how I think about it. I'm trying to get better and better and better so I can have a nationally syndicated talk show where I can carry the show. None of this is really scripted at all. I'm not reading anything. I think you can tell that. It is very much stream of conscious. I started this, doing these shows, really not knowing, could I do it? And that was a big question mark. Could I carry a show? And initially, I did it once a week for an hour. I quickly determined, yes, I could carry a one-hour show. Most people can't that are on talk radio today. With few exceptions, and those few exceptions, not all of them, but many of them, are the stars, including Rush Limbaugh, whether you like him or love him. I think he's terrific. Mike Savage, for example, same way. I'm sort of half and half on Michael Savage. When Michael Savage is good, he's good. But a lot of time, he bores me to tears. And I haven't really, he's changed the time slot, and I, before he was in the night, and I listened to him. Some nights, I just turned him off. I said, he's having a nervous breakdown, or is he talking about the latest restaurant? And I really enjoy him, but he's not everyone's cup of tea, is what I'm trying to say. But he's very much, it's Michael Savage for 2 hours, or however long he's on. But there are many talk show hosts that, frankly, rely on people calling in. And the problem with that is sometimes they don't call in. You can have nights where you get the crazies or the boring people. And I'm not trying to insult their audience, but that happens. Some nights the phone calls are absolutely brilliant. But it's very much hit or miss, and it really depends on how tightly controlled the screening is. So people, and that's probably the majority of people, because the only way you can do a show like this, you have to prepare. Don't think Rush Limbaugh or even Savage just walks in. They do a lot of preparation. I try to focus, my focus is on a few stories. I'm trying to increase the range of stories. For example, notice I was an early listener and still listen, but not as much to Rush Limbaugh. And I noticed when he was going deaf. I knew there was a problem. I didn't know what it was. But when he lost his hearing, the shows before it, I knew there was something basically wrong. And subsequently found out, and this was years ago. Well, it's subtle, but I think his show changed. And today what he does is many news stories, many of them off the Drudge Report. And many of the people in talk radio, including me, are the first place they go to is the Drudge Report. And the reason why I'm doing this story is, one, I already did a story several weeks ago. And I actually, it wasn't on the Drudge when I did it. And I said, boy, I think I beat him here. Usually Drudge sets more or less the agenda of what you're going to hear on talk radio, and to a lesser extent, but still a big extent, what you're going to hear on your television news. Now, some of this is obvious. They are breaking news stories that everyone is going to cover. I decided to, as a change of pace, to do technology today because this is a follow-up of an earlier show, and I'll link it when I publish my notes to this. Now, what I'm going to be doing tomorrow, maybe, and let me give you the maybe, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do a show tomorrow because of this district-wide meeting. You can get in the building, students. However, that is being discouraged. And the way to discourage it, they close the library and they close the computer labs. In my mind, one of the only reasons students will come to campus tomorrow is to get the web access. And to my knowledge, they haven't shut that down, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did. Usually when they totally shut down the buildings, they will shut down the web access. I don't think they're going to go to that length, but I would not put past the current administration. And that's all I'm going to say about it. So if you're on the faculty or staff, you're obviously aware of the next 2 days and what's going on and where you be. I wish you well. Have a great meeting. Do your public service, whatever it is. You see what sort of grates on me? I think whatever you want to return to the community should be voluntary. For example, I was very, very active for a period of when I was in the financial service industry. I was very active in the Dallas chapter of Texas Society of CPAs. I was active in that chapter, chaired many committees, including the Financial Planning Committee, Small Business Committee. I was active. And I would also put on presentations. I would do it, or I would arrange for other people to do it. We would bring them into the chapter, and the members of the local CPA society, as well as guests, could attend them. There were reasons I was doing this. I wanted to do it. I was trying to expose other people to what I provided as a service. There's self-interest here, but I was serving the professional community of CPAs and people related to financial planning and small businesses. That's what I consider public service, and businesses do it all the time. Sometimes it's a local charity. It might not be a professional organization. It might be, for example, getting involved with people that trying to, literacy is a problem, and I've known people that teach people to read. Adults that can't read, they teach them to read. The key point here is it's voluntary, and you choose how you want to. If you, one way to think about it is pay back to the community, because you're part of a community and you want to pay back to that community. Some people don't feel that obligation. I understand. The key word here is voluntary. I volunteered a lot of my time and energy doing that. I didn't have to do it. I didn't have to be a member, and it wasn't just the Texas Society of CPAs. It was also the local financial certified financial planners. I did that, and it took time, involved, glad I did it, met many people. I no longer do that because I'm retired from that field. That's my choice. But it's a little grating when you have designated days to do your service. You see the point? And that's what's happening on district-wide. It's not just at the Richland College campus. We're part of the DCCD that I'll say at the closing. That's the Dallas Community College. Dallas County Community College District. Because we have, I think, 7 or 8 campuses throughout Dallas. They used to be called junior colleges. Now they're community colleges. They're 2-year colleges where students at a much reduced price can get the first 2 years of their college education. Well, this district meeting tomorrow will be, it's really for the faculty and staff to get involved with the community. I wish them well, but there's something still funny about that to me, or grating about it, and annoys me. They're going to do their community service, but who's the first one that pays for that? Is the students not having access to the library or the computer labs? I scratch my head. I mean, wait a minute. What is our primary mission here? I think it's to get a college education, if that's what you need, or we have a lot of what we call workforce training. These are people that need to develop certain skill sets, so they come to college and their courses and whatever they're interested in. Many of them already have their degrees. I have my degrees. I don't need another degree. As a matter of fact, I have plans to do a lot of writing and speaking. I have no plans to get another degree. I'm probably will get one just by, if you take a number of courses, after a while, you almost get a degree by default. But that's another topic. So the campus is going to be closed, and I may or may not be able to give the, I definitely won't be doing the Friday show, and I may not be able to do the Thursday show. And I'm hoping I can, for the simple reason we are going to get the paper out Thursday, or put to bed Thursday. It'll be out next Monday. Hopefully I'll have an article in it, but that usually requires time, and instead of doing it Friday, they're doing it Thursday. And I'll be in here Thursday in case there are any questions on my article, but I'm going to be trying to do my Friday show Thursday for 2 hours. And I need to ask the person in charge of the department. Now, she might say no. Who knows? If she says no, fine. I get 2 days off. Not really. Because anyone in the talk show business knows you're doing show prep every day. And you never know what you're going to be talking about. Like, I came in here really focused on the show that I'll do tomorrow if I can, and that's the Congressional Budget Office estimates, because this really is showing the negative consequences of Obamacare. It is a lot. Goal of Obamacare supposedly was reduce the number of uninsured. What it's real, and it's doing a little of that, not much, for a lot of money, and it's having a terrific employment impact. And I've written and had and have talked about this on the show, especially on colleges, the impact. So that I will be touching on Thursday or Monday if I can't get on. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show, Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening. For the college staff, have a great meetings Thursday and Friday. Do your public service. And for the students, enjoy your two-day vacation. Maybe you'll have a chance to get caught up on the assignments that you have been unable to do. Have a great 2 days or 4-day weekend.